seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Suck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, welcome along to Golf Weekly. So, the European Tour has its grand finale this week. Henrik Stenson poised to win the race to Dubai, though Alex Noren may have hit form at just the right time. Rory McIlroy needs something of a miracle if he's to win it for the second year in a row. We're going to talk to Peter Lawrie about that later in the pod this week. Mainly, though, we're going to talk to him about golf at the opposite end of the spectrum, because while the 60 players in Dubai are playing for a prize fund of $8 million, this week has also seen Q School take place in Spain. 25 players will earn tour cards after what is a pretty grueling week. The sixth and final round of that taking place today. Peter has been to Q School as recently as last year, and I know he's some pretty strong views on it. So we're going to talk to Peter Lawrie in a little while. We're also going to touch on some more good news for the Irish Open, increased prize fund, a new date as well, all part of the new Rolex series. So that is good news, isn't it, Fionn?
It is indeed, Nathan.
You're going to put your cynical self back in its box.
Oh, yeah, geez, no, how could you not? That's brilliant. No Joe this week.
No Joe this week. As far as I know, he's just taking a few days off. Though I was tuned in very early this morning to the DP World Tour final in Dubai. And I was a bit worried. I was like, be upsetting now if Joe appeared in the corner of the screen. If like an invite had come in for Team Golf Weekly to go over and spend the week
and he just went on his own.
And he said, sorry, the lads aren't available.
I can go.
I'll go.
No, I mean, obviously he's at an undisclosed location, but I have assurances that this location is very much within the counties of Ireland.
Okay. A nice romantic few days away.
I think so.
Is he getting some practice in?
For a future.
For golf.
With Mrs. Joe Malloy.
That's not what I was talking about.
Sorry.
You're taking this down a path I didn't intend to go down.
Yeah, he might play. I know he played yesterday and he says to me, he goes, I was a bit rusty. I was four off. I'm like, four off what? And he goes, my handicap. I'm like, shut up.
please, shut up. So we've a lot to get through. There's, even though it's kind of end of season this time of the year, this was the time of year last year when maybe we were less committed. We used to kind of go, will we do the pod this week? It's not much happening. Maybe we leave it. There's a lot going on this week.
There is,
there's
actually
a lot to talk about. And we've had a lot of tweets. I'd say we've had a record. We'd record listenership a couple of weeks ago. I'd say we've had a record amount of tweets in this week. Starting with Andrew Kiley, who is at the DP World Tour Championship. Picture of Andrew standing by the 18th tee in Dubai.
I know Andrew well.
Do you?
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Good.
Yeah.
Free entry all week. I just happened to be wandering around the website for the DP World Tour Championship and looked at tickets. Free entry for the entire week.
Have you not noticed that even though on television it's a pretty spectacular event, what course are they playing? Is the Majoli or whatever? But they're actually lovely courses, but nobody's interested in it, like local. So I presume
it's the expats.
Yeah, it's expats. So I presume free in is just to try and get, like, just tease up the crowd so you have at least one deep around the greens.
It'll be good Sunday evening, I presume.
We hope.
Con Finnegan, send us a picture as well. He's at Pebble Beach. Ugh. Listen to the superb pod in the car. Sadly, my game is at a vulnerable state at the moment, so I didn't play.
Yeah.
You see, I
go on.
Have you played Pebble Beach?
No.
I've been to Pebble Beach.
So have I.
And I was on my honeymoon and my wife's like, go on, go play. And I was like, I just wouldn't enjoy it. Like,
no.
I wasn't playing good enough golf to go around with probably three Americans who are millionaires playing off single figures, and I'm like hacking around going, ugh.
Also as well, is that because obviously it's the most popular public course in America, or the most vaunted and celebrated, they put you out in groups of four at 12-minute intervals, and they keep those intervals going. So you need to keep pace of play going. Like, if you hack out and lose a ball, that's it. Just drop one and keep going.
It's not a relaxing round of golf.
It's not a relaxing round of golf. And sorry, I didn't play, but what I did was I sat for an hour on the first tee, sad sack loser that I am, and watched groups go out. And you're right, it is. And it's kind of trophy golf for so many people. So it's that dream. It's $500 each.
Yeah.
You get the whole works. And so it's cigars on the first. It's all celebratory. But it is, you are under pressure, I think.
Yeah.
And so if you have, your game has to be halfway decent to enjoy it.
It'd be similar to St. Andrews in that I wouldn't be overly worried about what my score would be at Pebble Beach. All I would want is to hit the green at the seventh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, I slice my tee shot on the seventh, the whole day be ruined.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's also going out of bounds on the 1st or the 18th at St. Andrews.
Mm.
I mean, hard to believe when you look at the broad width of the fairway, but it has happened. It does happen. And that would be depressing. Or kind of, you know, chunking it on the 17th. Yeah, there's lots of places. But St. Andrews is a much easier course than Pebble Beach.
Mm. Kieran O'D, thought for the pod, Rolex Series announced. Is the European Tour fighting back?
£69 million worth of fight back, isn't it? Is that what the... That's the money, that's the investment?
More or less. So £2 million increase. So $7 million minimum? I think it's £5.6 million, maybe it's €7 million minimum, which is a £2 million increase on the Irish Open alone.
Yeah.
I think it is. It's definitely the European Tour fighting back. Keith Pelley's come in. He's realised that we're not good. Well, we'll have a tour that is 12 months. You can't keep people's attention for 12 months. And they've picked good times. So even looking at the Irish Open, because I was wondering, so what sort of potential players can we see coming over? It's up against the Greenbrier, which is, it's not played on one of the great courses. You'll have a run. It's a run-of-the-mill PGA Tour event, which means because it's now part of a link swing with the Scottish Open and the Open all within 3 weeks, you could be looking at somebody like Phil Mickelson saying, yeah, maybe I will go to Port Stewart next year. Maybe this is, maybe 2 weeks. 2 weeks of links practice is better than 1 week.
Is it fighting back or is it showing signs of life unlike any other it's shown for a good number of years? So, I don't think Keith Pelley in his wildest dreams think that he can ever rank alongside the PGA. And I think he himself would admit it would be foolish of anyone to think that that could ever be possible. But that it can be a viable second or a viable tour, sure, you know. And to stop the bleed, I think, more than anything.
McIlroy's comments were interesting. We're going to touch on this a little bit later on, that it's becoming harder and harder for players to be a world tour player where you split your time between the PGA Tour and the European Tour. And that's probably a worrying comment for the European Tour. Whereas I think the reason behind this from Keith Pelley's point of view is to make it easier for players to have a world tour. So you'll go to America for your build up to the Masters. You'll come back to Europe, maybe play at Wentworth. You might go to America again. You'll go to the America again for the US Open. Then you'll come back to Europe for the British and the swing leading up to that. You go back to America again and you may come back to Europe. So you're back and forth 3 or 4 times a year, but you're there for 3-4 week spells.
That's easily doable.
Yeah.
Do you not think?
I would have thought so.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's not as if these guys are queuing up to, can we have premium economy passengers next?
Some of them are, though.
Well, not doing both.
Yeah.
No way.
I did wonder, was it Rory sending out a little bit of a warning that I may not be here forever? Once I have kids, I'm going to be settling down in Florida.
That's a very good point. I think you're absolutely right. I hadn't even thought of it in those terms. But yeah, realistically, I mean, Rory McIlroy isn't going to stay mid-20s and free forever. You know, this is a guy who's presumably...
He's getting married.
If
rumours are to be believed in Mayo at the end of the year.
Where?
Ashford Castle, yeah.
He likes Ashford. He checked into Ashford Castle not last New Year's, the year before. And
that's the rumour on the streets of Mayo.
And you, of anyone, are you still in the local paper weekly?
I don't want to talk about it because I opened it up today and Oisín Langan was in page 2.
He's from Waterford.
I know. It was quite upsetting for me. We'll chat more about Rory and the Irish Open and whatever happens down the road. Like, from the Irish Open, where it is now to where it was 5 years ago is pretty spectacular. Rob Dunn, I don't even know if I want to go into this. There's a few of these. I'd be in favour of the recap of Joe's good season. We had to listen about the other chap hitting it sideways for long enough.
What is it about us that we prefer
to enjoy your failures than Joe's success?
I mentioned it twice. Because I saw that tweet as like, oh, enough. Jeez. Joe's success. Yeah. Joe's played brilliantly. Here's a simple thing. He went to Noel Fox. Noel Fox told him to stop rotating his hands, moving around. Joe has the basics of a pretty good swing. He took all these, what'll I try this day, out of his mind, and Joe started hitting it well, and that built on confidence. And before, because he's actually, he hits the ball a mile. He's young and he's pretty strong. So, you know.
Look, we're all delighted for him. We're delighted from. How is your game?
I haven't played.
Has it been a turnaround?
I haven't played in a while.
No.
I was meant to play.
Are you afraid to play?
A little bit. Yeah. Now, in fairness, I have been busy, but if I was to be perfectly honest, there's a little part of me that had a scene kind of testing out what improvements I've made. I will, though. I definitely will get back to it. Anyway, enough. I'm boring myself, so never mind.
Sean Doolan. Great pod this week, lads. But Joe, I think you talked about breaking 80 more than Fiona's ever talked about his girlfriend.
Well, Joe is a funny one. Like, I think he had very unreal expectations. I remember last year he was going, I'm giving up this game. Like, seriously, I was like, you've been playing a wet week. What are you talking about? And yeah, but I think breaking 80, it shocked him. It really did.
Twice.
Yeah, he did it twice.
Alex Morgan, I want to hear about the changes, Joe Malloy. Be good to hear some positivity after weeks of Fionn Davenport driver woes.
This is what I mean. Like, maybe it was. It didn't feel like weeks. I thought I just made.
Listen, we're seeing the extremes here. Like, your game can go from one way to the other.
I think,
and I'll just sit calmly in the middle.
I think the driver woes. I don't know. I just think that it's more representative of your average golfer experience. You know,
than suddenly shooting in
woe,
the 80s.
More woe
every
than win.
Damien Kelly. Only restriction in choosing a teammate, this is what we were talking about last week, in the Zurich Classic, is that they're a member of the PGA Tour, so two in the top 80 can play together. I was getting lots of abuses for this on my own Twitter account.
Oh, right.
Because I had said last week, which is what I had read before it was officially announced, that if you were in the top 80, you had to choose somebody outside the top 80. But then they obviously listened in and said, actually, those guys are onto something. So they announced their first two pairings. Rose and Stenson are playing together. And Ricky Fowler and Jason Day.
Ryder Cup Redux.
Yeah. Now, if you got McIlroy involved, I don't think he's going to play, but it's definitely better that way. Dave Kelly, only 9 golfers who got their cards in Q School last year retained their cards this year.
It would be interesting to look at the statistics of retention, because as you point out, and I know we'll talk to Laurie now shortly about it's the hardest thing. I can't imagine a sporting endeavour or an individual challenge that's quite as difficult as Q School, but that you reach that summit, I wonder how many of them, or a percentage of how many, actually hold on to it or fall off
And there's also a reason why you're in Q School.
Yeah.
You know, so you have players who are just starting their career and are trying to come through that way, and you have players who are at the end of their career and are just trying to hang on. But you also have a lot of players whose ranking is somewhere between 100 and 150th on the European Tour, and that's sort of their natural level. Dave goes on to say 13 of the top 40 players who got their card last year will be back in Q School this year as well. Ross Mooney, something we were chatting about last week, listening to Golf Weekly and the lads' take on the captain's prize. Any club golfer worth his salt would give his right arm to win a captain's prize, Joe Malloy.
Yeah, and in fairness, I thought about it afterwards, and I didn't want to give the impression in kind of telling Joe about it that he didn't care. I just think the point I was trying to make last week was that because Joe's never played in the captain's prize, he didn't fully appreciate its value and significance to any club golfer. Mm. And it is the big event of the season. And I thought it was quite funny. And the proof in the pudding was when I said to him, you've never played. And he goes, how do you know? I was like, because believe me, you'd know you've played in the captain's prize.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think anyone would love to be in contention for a captain's
prize.
That'd
be amazing.
For the competitive element,
pressure. It's brilliant.
Suddenly you find out a lot more about your golf game.
You really, really do. And people put bets on you, and, you know, the betting slips go up, or the betting, the stakes go up, and there's chat in the clubhouse. It's a really exciting, for club golfers, it's a really exciting part of the season.
One of Golf Weekly's true friends of the pod, one of our greatest friends of the pod, Damien O'Brien, still time to fly over for the race to Dubai. Myself and Paul will be there. Hashtag not axe murderers.
Not axe murderers, indeed. God, I tell you, given that we woke up this morning to the flurries, the first snow flurries of the season, I would do nothing more. I'd like
do
nothing
we have a season
more.
Of snow?
Yeah, whatever. Like, it's. I tell you what it is. The first,
I would love to be in Dubai.
Yeah.
Next year we're available.
We are. 100%.
We'll bring our Callaway
available.
Clubs, the whole shebang. You name it. Stephen, lads, just finished the pod. Stunned at Joe's astounding ignorance of Captain's Prize. You just know he'll go and win it next year. Mm. Yeah. Endakil
Gallon. All the other bandits.
If there's a more enjoyable weekly podcast than Golf Weekly, I'm yet to hear it. Really gets me in the mood to shoot 100 plus on a Saturday morning.
Nice work.
Ian Sweeney, defo want to hear about Joe's handicap, especially breaking 80 twice in quick succession. I break 80 about twice a year, also off 13.
Yeah.
Dan Delancrow on Twitter. Hearing, oh, you like this, Fionn. Hearing you liberal snobs having to grapple with the Trump victory was music to my ears. Yeah. Thanks for the laughs. Hashtag stick to golf.
Yeah. Like, what can you say? I saw, did you notice that, are you surprised? Just as we weren't surprised that Jack Nicklaus is a supporter of Donald Trump, did you see Greg Norman this week? Greg Norman apparently was instrumental in facilitating the phone call between Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull and President-elect Donald Trump. And so apparently he passed on the number to the Australian ambassador to the US, Joe Hockey. But my favourite quote, and in fairness, who doesn't want to be a friend to power? But Greg Norman says, I'm fortunate enough to call Mr. Trump a friend. Mr. Trump? Should he? Maybe.
President-elect.
Yeah, president-elect. Or Donald. Like, normally, would you be on first-name terms? Or perhaps Greg Norman appreciates that since his election, he's now embodies the office rather than just the man. So now he has to be either Mr. Trump or President-elect Trump.
He has to be more respectful.
He has to be more respectful.
I printed out a lot of tweets.
Yeah.
Is this higher than average? It feels like it's higher than average. It's only the two of us, so
yeah.
I'm not saying we need to fill time.
I was just going to say, are we filling time?
No, we're not filling time. Finally, Thomas Goodall. Enjoying this week's episode of Geopolitical Weekly.
Oh, yeah.
If you guys get a Callaway contract, they'll bring you to Petco Park Links. I don't know where Petco Park Links
maybe
is.
Yeah, I don't know either.
We're willing to go anywhere, particularly Dubai this time of the year, maybe next year. Maybe that could be what the European Tour needs to spruce up the Race to Dubai finale.
Where would we set up our little broadcast booth?
Over the
18th? I was going to say the 9th, maybe.
There'll be plenty of space, though, isn't it? Pretty much the biggest clubhouse
huge.
In the world.
Oh, yes, it is. It's gigantic. I've also played in the one in Abu Dhabi. The Abu Dhabi Golf Club? You know, the one with the big eagle or the hawk?
Did you just make that up? I've also played in that place in Abu Dhabi. I think they call it the Abu Dhabi Golf Club.
No, the one where, and listeners will, it's the one with the falcon-shaped clubhouse.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, that's where they play in Abu Dhabi, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
What's it called? It's called the National... or whatever. But that's a lovely course.
All right. Keep your tweets coming in. We'll have more of them to come next week. We're going to chat about the Irish Open. We're going to chat about Lee Westwood and Danny Willett and Chris Wood and all the English golfers falling out. So there's a lot to get through. But up next, we're going to be chatting to Peter Lawrie. All right, so it's a huge week on the European Tour, really at the extremes of the European Tour. The mega money on offer for the finale of the Race to Dubai and the DP World Tour Championship. You got the top 60 on the European Tour involved there. And then in Spain, over in Girona, today actually is the final day of Q School, the sixth round of the most grueling week of the year. So it's a really good time to get on the pod, I think for the first time actually, just pod alone rather than just on off the ball. Peter Lawrie. Peter, how's it going?
I'm very good, Nathan. Thank
the
you
new
very much.
Director of golf at Luttrellstown, and we mentioned earlier in the pod, the snow has arrived, which means I'm hearing, Peter, day off for you, feet up.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I'm trying to catch up. You want to see the amount of paperwork that's on my desk at this moment in time, which I wouldn't have been used to. But I'm winding my way through it, and I'm getting there slowly but surely. But no, our golf course is closed today due to a heavy downpour of rain and then a bit of snow this morning.
Yeah, you're there a couple of months. All's going well?
I'm here nearly 2 months now. So yeah, all's going so far, so good.
Very good.
They haven't shown me the door as of yet, so hopefully they won't.
You're probably the perfect person to talk to for this conversation when it comes to the extremes of the European Tour, because you've played in the Race to Dubai finale. You had a really good finish 2012, finished 14th, and then last year you were at Q School and a pretty miserable experience there. So we might talk to you about the Race to Dubai finale. Just looking at the leaderboard, it's Lee Westwood who leads after the first round. He's on 6 under par, shot ahead of Julian Kuzna and Nicholas Coltsarts. Then you have Francesco Molinari, Sergio Garcia and Yousse Loughton amongst those on 4 under par. Shane Lowry is on 2 under par. Patrick Harrington is on level par. And Rory McIlroy is way, way down the leaderboard, 50th place out of the 60 playing this week. He's on 2 over par with 3 to play. So 2012, Peter, 14th. It's still the same course. Any surprise to see a player of Westwood style at the top?
No, you know, Lee has done very well around that golf course. It suits a guy who hits the ball in the air, long hitter, you know, controls his iron shots very well. greens are good. Lee would have played, you know, earlier than most, got his round finished, and you know, middle of the day is the best time to play there. I used to fight with the organisers, having been there for 4 years, that if you play first thing in the morning, you're at a terrible advantage because the air is damp, the golf course is not running. It's very, very hard to put a score together, you know, if you're first or second out. While the afternoon, there's a massive difference between morning and afternoon. While the air is much thinner, ball is going much further, it's warm. So your tee time is very important on this first day, and the score you shoot is exceptionally important. Now, Lee Westwood is there at 6 under. Rory, as you said, is back at, what, 2 over par?
2 over, yeah.
He will find it very difficult to climb up the leaderboard.
Mm. He's kind of given up, though, hasn't he? He kind of conceded that he wasn't going to manage it this week, hadn't he?
Well, it's very hard to tell with Rory, you know. 1 minute he's, you know, you can see that there's an awful lot of desire in him. Look at the Ryder Cup. And then other times, you know what I mean, you might say exactly what you've said, Fionn, and, you know, say that, you know, is he bothered?
Yeah.
But you never know with Rory, you know. And
I think in fairness to Rory, what he was saying was that he didn't think he had a chance of winning the race to Dubai because he basically needed Henrik Stenson to finish outside the top 45, Willett to finish outside the top 5, that there was a lot of, and he needed to win. But he seems pretty desperate to win because if he wins this week, more than likely he gets the world number one spot back right at the start.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I suppose the point is he's...
And he needs a few quid, doesn't he? You know, a few quid for Christmas.
Listen, the petrol for those private planes doesn't pay for itself.
No, dead right.
Yeah, but to consider... I mean, I suppose the... Sorry, just to kind of clarify, going into this week, Willett, who's in second place, he's 299,675 points behind Stenson. And... So to kind of, like, what I suppose I'm saying is that Rory was being fairly realistic in his assessment of his chances of topping the race.
The three main contenders, by the way, Stenson, who leads, he's on level par at the moment. Alex Noren in third place, he's on 1 under par. And Danny Willett is on 2 under par. So they're all pretty much bunched in together. Peter, I was just looking back at your record in Dubai. And so you finished 14th. You get 120 grand for that, for finishing 14th. In the Dubai World Championship.
Life is tough, isn't it?
Do you get a cheque when you're walking out the door? Or does that money just land in your account? How does that work?
It comes into your account about a couple of weeks later.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks later. So, as I think JP put it very nicely, your account is hit with a tsunami of cash, you know?
Yeah.
But look, you know, over the years, I did very well. But then, you know, you turn around to guys who are playing or who are fighting for their card now. And, like, the winner's probably going to get about maybe 6 grand, maybe 4 grand, I think, in tour school you get. And, you know, you take, like, let's take Eddie Pepperell. I'm just looking at it here on the list. He's played probably 25 tournaments, maybe 30 tournaments last year. I think he made 25 grand for the whole year, or maybe a little bit more. And probably spent about 120 grand. So he's lost 100 grand. So there's two massive differences, and unfortunately that's the way the tour is. It's a you get these massive highs and then you have the massive lows.
Yeah. So you might talk to us about Q School, because when we had you on when you were announcing your retirement, like, I think at that stage you were quite content with your decision. You were pretty satisfied with the career that you'd had. But the one part of the conversation that you really seemed, maybe bitter isn't quite the right word, but really annoyed and frustrated with, was the whole Q School experience and just how tough it is to deal with for professionals, and how maybe there's almost, it's not very respectful to tour professionals what they have to go through over that week. So could you talk us through Q School and sort of what happens from when you land to when the week wraps up?
Well, you'd normally try and arrive 2 days beforehand. You arrive Barcelona Airport. Having been out on tour for a long time, when you arrive at most airports, there's a car waiting for you to whisk you off to the golf course or the hotel or whatever. With Tour School, you go rent a car. You drive up. The car park is full of Ford Fiestas, you name whatever car you want to name in a small little minis,
yeah,
whatever else. They're all hire cars. Every one of them is a hire car.
Right.
So you arrive in. There's no tour vans. There's one. The physio van is there, and just the atmosphere is just. It's not like any other tournament that you'd go to. The atmosphere is dead. Nobody wants to look at each other. Nobody wants to talk to each other. The pressure is on, and you know that's what you're going to have to deal with for the whole week.
Are there spectators?
Unfortunately, there is, which I often find very surprising why they let spectators in, to be honest with you. You know, it's an exam. We're all doing an exam. There's 150-odd guys doing an exam. There really should be no spectators in there. Mm. But there is. So, and the joy they get out of it is, you'd wonder, you know, watching, as I would say, grown men cry, you know what I mean? Because that's the kind of pressure you're putting yourself under, to try and get a card. And even when you look at it, you know, the tour school guys, they up to this year have had very few starts. Like, you'll take the winner of the tour school. He won't play in any of the Desert Swing. He won't play in the likes of Wentworth and the Irish Open and the Scottish Open and the French Open. So tour school is really, it's become a feeder to the Challenge Tour, and then the Challenge Tour is a feeder to the main tour.
Yeah, Peter, to and you might explain this to us as well, is that like the three stages of Q School, so depending on your status, you could be playing up to 252 holes of golf.
Yeah, just to get a card.
Just to get the card.
Just to get, and this is the one thing that kids don't realise is, and I call them kids because most of them are 18, 19 years of age. This year is a bit different. Tour school this year was, the amount of talent that is in tour school this year is incredible. But as you said, you go to stage one, you get through stage one, then you go on to stage two. If you get through stage two, you're through to the final stage. And you think to yourself, I'm going to get this magical tour card and I'm going to be playing every event and it's wonderful. And then you enter every event and you might get one in South Africa, then you don't get any in the Middle East, then you might get one in Malaysia, in India. And then you come back to Europe and you get a few small events, and then you don't get the big events, then you get a few more smaller events. And if you haven't played, you know, spectacularly well, it's very hard to get your, keep a card.
Yeah.
Never mind a, you know, move up.
How does the average, you know, newbie on the European Tour, they've come through Q School, they're one of the top 25, they've landed that prestigious European Tour card. Yeah. And as you say, so they get weird invites, you know, that are far away. Who's funding that?
Themselves or their sponsors.
Right.
So this is the big thing. Like, I would say to a lot of them, and you have to be realistic, you know what I mean? At a certain stage, I was 43, so or 42, going on 43. You have to be realistic. You have to say, right, how much am I going to earn into how much am I going to pay out?
Yeah.
Most of these guys will probably play out 100 grand for the year. So that's what they're gambling.
That's your break even.
100 grand, yeah.
Yeah. And
so imagine anybody listening to this show. I promise you that you have to give me 100 grand and then you go to work.
And I cannot in any way in good conscience give you a guarantee that I can recoup that 100 grand for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because I think perhaps the impression that's given is that once you land the tour card, that all these massive endorsements come running in and there's all these sponsors are tripping over themselves to give you money to invest in you, and
no.
It's not quite the case, is it?
No. As my advice to many of the young lads who have asked me, and trust me, my door is open all the time to the young lads coming up, especially Irish lads, is your sponsorship is going to come to people close to you. You know, whether it be family, friends, business acquaintances, whatever else. It's people that are close to you right now. It's not these management companies who are going to come in and promise you the sun, moon, and stars. It's going to be the people beside you, especially for your first year. Mm. After that, then, you know, if you've done well, then a management company can help you. But the very first year you're out there, it's people in your golf club, people your parents might know, people your friends might know, who will help you out. It's not a case of, you know, big management groups and, you know, the likes of Titleist or TaylorMade or Nike or whatever else spending, you know, fortunes upon you. Yeah. They're not going to do it. They don't do it anymore. They did it a long time ago, to be fair. You know, a tour school guy might have got a 40,000 contract.
Right.
And that would cover a lot of his expenses if he was careful. But not anymore. No, not anymore.
Is there a camaraderie at tour school where, like, you're all in this together? You all know what's at stake. Does that mean that there's a closeness to the players over that week? Or is it actually the opposite, that you're fighting for your life here, so you really don't care what anyone else is doing?
You'd probably find out how a couple of lads get on, a couple of guys close to you. But in general, everybody goes on their merry way. You know what I mean? They just do their own thing, and they try and keep away from everybody else because they don't want to hear about, oh, I three putted this hole, or I hit it in there. They just want to focus on what they're doing themselves.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking at the leaderboard here, and, you know, there's a few guys, like, I'm delighted to see Ricardo Gonzalez. You know, he's played the front nine in 30.
Mm.
You know, Ricardo really hasn't had a card in probably 3 or 4 years. He's 48 years of age. So he's got 3 holes to play, and he's tied for third.
Yi
Yang.
It's a hell of a mix, isn't it, when you look at that leaderboard? Like, Eduardo Molinari played at a Ryder Cup. He's currently leading. Like, his brother playing at a Ryder Cup together. Francesco's contending in Dubai at the World Tour Championship. You've Eduardo top of the leaderboard and 12 under par. You touched on Ricardo Gonzalez. You've someone like Tom Lewis, who was the next big thing for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Eddie Pepperell, who looked as though he was going to be a real solid European Tour player. Yeah. And then you mentioned Yi Yang, like, major winner.
Major winner. Beat Tiger.
Yeah.
And there he is, back at Tour School.
Yeah.
He just, you know, Richard S. Johnson, he's been knocking around for a long, long time now. You know, Stuart Manley has been back to tour school more than I don't know how many times. Richard McAvoy, the same. I don't think he's had a full year on tour that he's kept his card. But each year he goes back to tour school and gets a card back, which is hard to believe.
Yeah.
Mark Foster, who's been on the tour for more than I have. I think he could be on the tour nearly 20-odd years.
Yeah.
First year back, and you know what I mean, he's in tied for 18th position. You know, he drops another shot and he won't get a card.
Peter, is there a distinct advantage to either being the experienced tour player that's dropped out and has to fall back into Q school, or the up and comer? Because I'm thinking, so the former have the advantage of all this experience, but they're obviously not playing well enough to keep their card, whereas the up-and-comer have no experience of playing at this kind of high-stakes level, but at the same time, they're playing well enough to have qualified for this stage of it in the first place.
In general, I would have said that for sure. You know what I mean? They don't know. They're just striving for this card, these illustrious cards that you'd say that, you know, that's out there, and, you know, they play their hearts out to get it.
Mm.
The guys who have already been there know what it's like, want to get back. So there's an awful lot of pressure there on them because they know the what happens if they're not there.
Yeah.
You know, you look at, say, you know, Eduardo now, you know, hopefully he's 12 under. You know, he's a lot of shots to play with. But there's a guy who knows what it's like to be on top of the world, you know what I mean, Ryder Cup, as you said. And now he's back, tour school, fighting to stay on tour.
Is there a better way of doing it?
No. No, unfortunately it does not. Not that I can think of it.
Yeah. I see they have made a change this week, and maybe this does affect players who are in and around that sort of level, that from next year, instead of it being the top 110 that get their cards, it's going to be the top 100, and then 10 people will get a card from an access list, which will ignore the 7 Rolex Series events, will ignore the Masters, the USPGA, will ignore the World Golf Championships. So the players that, I guess the guys who are getting their cards here, they will now actually have a better chance of retaining their cards?
Yeah, I floated this idea 3 years ago. And it's been 3 years coming.
Right.
Working hard on it.
Yeah.
To try, because there's such a vast difference between the amount of money you play for if you're in the majors or you're in the World Championships for the amount of money you play for in regular tournaments.
Yeah.
And my point to them all was, is, let's say, the likes of Portuguese Masters, right, €2 million. And you take the World Series events, or World Championship events, which are €10 million. So is it 5 times greater? And I used to say, no, it's not.
Mm.
But give me how many times it is greater. And let's work in something like that. And that's why I campaigned to get rid of money and put it into points. So you could actually, you know, equate one to the other on a point system rather than on a money system.
Yeah.
Because the guys playing in these events, they have it too easy. You know, they turn up, they're guaranteed 30-odd grand.
There's no cut.
If you play in the likes of Portugal, and Portugal is quite one of the big normal tournaments. I could give you, we played Madeira Island Open, used to be for 700,000.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know what I mean? To win Madeira was 100 grand. I think to finish top 10 was 10 grand.
Jeez.
You turn up at a World Championship event and you're guaranteed, I think, 27, I think it is, last place.
Yeah. Yeah, it almost feels as though, while Q School, that may not, you can't really change that process, this is the start of changing what happens next. Because if you, from what you're saying, if you come through Q School, then you get onto the European Tour, but they're putting you on the back foot
straight
already.
Away. Yeah, because you can't get into the tournament.
Yeah.
You have no access. And that's why I would have liked, I tried to push in relation to a Monday qualifying. You know, give the guys a chance. You know, strip out all the, and don't get me wrong, I was a big recipient, a person who received a lot of invites. But take out a lot of the invites and put it as a Q School type
yeah.
of thing, you know.
Before we let you go, Peter, some really good news for the Irish Open this week. It is going to be part of this new Rolex series. So next year, the prize fund is going to go from $4.3 million to $7 million up at Port Stewart. It's one of 7 events to receive this bump in purse. It's now going to be 2 weeks before the Open Championship. It's, well, certainly this year, it's going to be part of a link swing with the Scottish Open and with the Open as well. Like, when you think where the Irish Open has come from, a decade ago when Harrington was winning it, I think he was the only member of the world's top 50 at that time. And even back 4 or 5 years ago, before Rory McIlroy became involved, like it at that stage, if you're looking at the pendulum, it was swinging more towards the Irish Open ceasing to exist compared to where it's got to right now.
The Irish Open nearly died. And I know that for a fact. You know, unless the tour looked after it for 2 years and put money into it. If they hadn't have done that, the Irish Open was gone, finished. Once they broke with Three,
yeah,
the mobile phone company, it nearly died to death. And to be fair, you know, there's a couple of guys who have, you know, did Trojan work on the Irish Open to keep it alive, and you know they deserve great recognition for what they did. But now it's back and it's amazing. $7 million for an Irish Open, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I just hope they get the field that I know they get all the Irish guys to play, but I just hope they get, you know, the big guys to come over and play.
Yeah, you would think with it, especially this year being 2 weeks before the Open, that it will appeal to some of the Americans.
Yes, yeah, very much so.
The following year then, so the way they're doing it at the moment, it's rotating from north to south.
Yep.
Part of the appeal is that it will be on a links course in Northern Ireland. When it comes back down south, we've seen in recent years that it's on a parkland course and that they are really the venues who want it. The bigger, perhaps somewhere like Luttrellstown might look at it eventually and hosting an Irish Open. But from taking that half off, but looking at the Irish Open, does it need to be on a links?
I think so, yes. I think to attract the people that they want to attract, it has to be on the links. You know, I would love to see it going to the likes of Portmarnock, the island, you know, some kind of a golf course like that. My own personal opinion, and I don't know whether Pat Ruddy would be listening, but I'd love to see it at the European Club.
What, the world's longest green?
Yeah, look, you know, Pat is Pat, and you know, he's done a phenomenal job down there. I used to play it as a young fella. I used to play it every Wednesday morning and say, fantastic golf course.
Mm.
But so is Portmarnock. So, you know, you'd love to see it somewhere there.
Three club difference depending on whether the flag's at the front or the back of the green.
Exactly.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Mm. I wouldn't like to have to cut it every day.
No.
Peter, great stuff. Thanks for taking the call.
No problem, Nathan. Fionn, thank you very much.
Talk to you soon.
Cheers, Peter.
Cheers, bye-bye.
Great stuff there from Peter Lowry, who's experienced it all.
Yeah, very measured, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was interesting that he was, I actually didn't know when I was putting that to him about that access list, which I thought was an interesting development because it has got totally ridiculous on the European Tour. As he mentioned that if you've one good week at the right tournament, you get into a World Golf Championship, and if you're in the right event and there's no cut, suddenly...
Yeah,
you're earning a load of money to probably get to your tour card for nothing.
Absolutely. And it's also interesting to hear it, the experience of Q School, from the point of view of a tried and tested European Tour pro.
Mm.
Because I know a couple of guys who were the other end, who were young pros coming up through the ranks, played a couple of Challenge Tour events, and then earned enough to get into the three stages of Q School. And to hear them tell it, it's the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life. Now, having said that, it's, you know... I don't know how comparable it is to, say, being a young professional footballer.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking.
And you're starting, you know, you're starting at the age of 9, whatever, and there's so many different hurdles.
No, but there is a comparison in that, a definite comparison in that. So say you're a 16-year-old professional footballer and you sign for Liverpool.
Yeah.
Everybody pats you on the back and says, well done, you've made it.
Yeah.
Same as if you get your card through Q School. So Gary Hurley's going along well there. If he gets his card, everyone will celebrate it and go... Yeah. Gary, you've made it. You're on the European Tour. Whereas Peter said, yeah, really. They kind of dangle it out in front of you and then say, every so often, when the other lads can't be bothered, we might let you. And quite often, you'll only get the call on a Monday or a Tuesday. You'll have to fly to South Africa.
Or India or whatever.
No prep. Yeah. And somehow, your entire career is dependent on this.
Mm.
I'm just looking at some of the names. So we mentioned them there. Molinari, he looks as though he's going to get his card. Tom Lewis, Eddie Pepperell. Wai Yang is three off the lead. He's in seventh.
What an unbelievable... To see Wai Yang in Q School, and
I know.
He beats Tiger, and then you never hear of him again. And of
Who,
course,
Tiger?
Come here. If Tiger had to, good thing he has a load of majors under his belt and exemptions, because I swear to you, he wouldn't make it through Q School.
Well, we'll get to find out in a couple of weeks.
We will. At the World Hero
Challenge. The word on the street yet again is that Tiger is striping it in practice.
He's excited.
The Irish point of view. So top 25, Gary Hurley is 4 under for his round after 10 holes. He's 4 under par. He's just one shot away. From his card as it stands.
What's the...
Michael Hoey, though, has dropped a shot. He doesn't look as though he's going to make it. He's in a tie for 43rd place. Like Michael Hoey, a 5-time European Tour winner. He's only 37. Now, I was reading an interview with him where he said, even if I don't get my card, I'm in a happier place now than I was a week ago because he figured something out.
Mm.
So on the invites alone. But going down through it, Ollie Wilson doesn't look as though he's going to make...
Ugh.
His card, Simon Kahn, who won the BMW PGA at Wentworth a couple of years ago, he isn't going to make his card. Alvaro Quiroz didn't even make the final stages of Q School.
He was the one that they were flaunting him a couple of years ago as the next great thing.
Yeah, yeah. I heard a story recently from somebody that Alvaro Quiroz, when he was at the peak of his powers and he was the longest hitter, maybe he is still the longest hitter on tour, but when he was playing brilliantly, that a representative of Jennifer Aniston contacted Alvaro Quiroz to say that she wanted to go on a date with him.
Whereas he is going, look, I'd rather you just gave me $100,000 and sponsored me.
And then he's now ringing up. I'm free now. Yeah, I'm free now.
I really am. That's amazing. I once played, or I caddied for a friend of mine in a first stage Q School event, and he was paired with some Swedish guy. And my friend... Pretty big hitter, like, you know, whatever, 290, 295 off the tee. And he hit a drive. The Swedish guy hit a drive that was a good 90 yards ahead of him. And my mate looks at me and goes, I cannot hit the ball that far. And you see the difference that when all these names you've never even heard of show up and are just unbelievably good.
Yeah, so it's not looking too good for Alvaro Quiroz. Mm. Quick mention before we move on of the latest then in the... World Tour Championship. McIlroy's just had a double bogey at 16 after having birdies at 14 and 15. He's 4 over par, 60 players playing. Rory is in 58.
58, yeah. I don't think, yeah.
It could be interesting because Stenson is level par. Perhaps if Willis was to go on a run, who knows? Who knows? Look, you could be listening to this on Sunday and this is totally irrelevant. All right, up next, we're actually going to be talking about the leader, Lee Westwood, and his old mate, Danny Willett. So we've a bit to get through. Kind of this is the any other business section of the pod. We'll talk about the Irish Open in a minute, but this is my favourite story of the week. Danny Willett and Lee Westwood. Like, poor old Danny Willett. He wins the Masters. This is the greatest year of his life. And now you're wondering, is he going to be looking back in 2016 and going, geez, I kind of blew that, didn't I? So, do you have the story? Do you want to tell the story?
Okay. So, Westwood was scheduled to play with Danny Willett in the World Cup of Golf next week. They partnered. They're friends.
Danny Willett's choice.
Danny
highest
Willett,
ranked.
Yeah, he's
English
the highest
player.
Ranked English player. So he had chosen his friend, Lee Westwood. Now, the World Cup of Golf is going to take place in Melbourne. So, you know, it's a ways away. But then Willett pulls out to protect his nagging back. He's got this back issue. And so the honour then passes to the next highest ranked golfer, who's Justin Rose. But Justin decides, I'm not going to play. So the honour passes down again to Chris Wood, who, instead of sticking with Westwood, who's already signed up, who's bought his flights to Melbourne, who's all set to play, he goes, well, I'm going to pick my friend, Andy Sullivan. But to add insult to injury, he didn't just pick him because he's his friend. He picked Andy Sullivan, or defended his choice of Andy Sullivan, by saying he gives us the best chance of winning. And that, to me, is the sting in the tail. That's the kicker. And needless to say, Nathan, as obviously this is what makes your story, is Lee Westwood is not best pleased.
Yeah, so you seem to have quotes from, I didn't see the quotes from Chris Wood. Did Chris Wood know when he was making the decision? Because often with golfers and with sports people, you know, they kind of hear, oh, you're going to the World Cup of Golf, you need to pick somebody. And he doesn't realise that Westwood has already been told. Did Wood know that Westwood already knew?
Well, I don't know. Here's the quote. So, first of all, Lee Westwood tells the Sun newspaper at the World at the Race to Dubai final, it's not great when it all happens at the last minute, especially as I'd geared all my end-of-season plans around playing in the World Cup. Now, having said that, if Westwood were to win in Dubai, he won't give a monkey's about the World Cup of Golf. It'll still sting him a little bit. However, Chris Wood was asked about this and he said, it's a bit of an awkward position to find yourself, to be honest. Danny made no bones about the fact he was picking his mate, and it probably looks like I've done the same thing. But it goes a lot deeper than that. Once I was told I was England's number one representative at the World Cup, my first thought was, who can I play with who will give us the best chance of winning it? Andy and Sully ticked all the boxes. And it's, yeah, so.
Yeah, that's.
Now,
Chris Wood is well within his right.
Exactly.
But also, that's quite a little dig at Willett as well of, oh, it was Danny's choice. And he didn't pick, he didn't go for, maybe he tried for Justin Rose. He didn't ask me, who was the third ranked player. He went for his mate.
He went
for his stablemate.
So Danny Willett then, his response is, obviously when the guys have booked their flights, I think it's not quite right. Just because one guy pulls out, the other guy has to kind of withdraw without having a say in it. I think you should then go down the list and see which guy potentially wants to play with such short notice. I don't see why they have switched it around and made it two brand new guys.
Westwood said, I haven't spoken to Woody yet, but frustrated would be one word you could describe how I feel about it. If I'd known earlier I wasn't going to be playing, I'd have played South Africa last week. I would also have tried to fit in one more after the World Cup, but that wasn't practical given the rush time frame.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit of a snafu all around, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's kind of funny though.
So we touched on it there with Peter Lawrie. Some big news from the European Tour. They're fighting back, or they're battling back, and they're just trying to level the playing field. And their new chief executive, Keith Pelley, is, maybe it's kind of like the US presidency, the first 100 days or 200 days is when you get everything done, because he's making a lot of pretty radical changes. And the European Tour is stumping up the cash now to basically raise prize funds. What matters to players? Prestige or cash money?
Cold cashola.
So the Irish Open is one of the main, if not the main beneficiary of this, because the prize fund is going to be £7 million next year. It'll be the same at the BMW PGA, the Scottish Open, Italian Open, and then the tournaments that are around now anyways, the Turkish Airlines Open, Nedbank, and the World Tour Championship. A minimum of £7 million at all of those. This sort of final series that we've had for the last time, That's gone. So it'll still be the World Tour Championship at the end. But like, this just transforms the Irish Open.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would wager that the one individual, more than Keith Petty, that we owe a huge debt of gratitude to is one Rory McIlroy. Without which none of this would be possible. And it shows Rory McIlroy's commitment to the Irish Open. It shows his commitment to maintaining Irish golf at the top of the European leaderboard. And I think it's brilliant news. Absolutely brilliant news all around.
You can't give enough credit to Rory McIlroy for
amazing,
this.
Amazing.
Like Peter Lowry touched on it there. The Irish Open was on the verge of dying.
Absolutely.
And for him to go from there to what we have next year is what we've spoken about for the last 2 or 3 years. Imagine what the Irish Open needs, a better time slot. Imagine if you could play the Irish Open the week before the Open. Now, the Scottish Open is still there, but like it's on such an upward trajectory at the moment. You wouldn't bet against the Irish Open taking place the week before the Open at some stage over the next couple of years, because McIlroy is their biggest star. And if he is going to be cutting back in the amount of tournaments he plays, and he says to Keith Pelly, who definitely seems to take on board whatever McIlroy says, if McIlroy turns around and says, listen, I'm going to play, I want the Irish Open the week before the Open, I'm going to play it every year, and I'm going to bring some of my mates.
I think it's a mark of good leadership by Keith Pelly to recognise where the real power lies, and he would be a fool to not listen to Rory McIlroy. And I don't think for a second that Rory McIlroy is being in any way dictatorial about this. Look, you know, he's Europe's top golfer, so these are my priorities, and I would very much like for the European Tour to fit in with that timescale. So it's brilliant. I have to say, it's refreshingly good news for the European Tour after, you know, years of just like drip feeding, one disappointing bit of news after another.
Yeah, brilliant. Peter touched on it there. I do wonder how many of the big names will come next year. So McIlroy has more or less said he's not going to do what he did a couple of years ago and
corral his mates.
Yeah, and then have to repay them as he is. He's going down to South Africa at the start of next year to repay Ernie Els, I presume. But so a lot of players, Mickelson included, a huge amount of the Americans would play the Scottish Open as their warm-up for the Open. But now they have another option, which is come play the Irish Open and then take a week off.
And the prize fund is there to make it an attractive option.
But they can also now come play their links golf, take a week off.
Absolutely.
You're relaxed. So it's a definite option. Like if they could get Mickelson up to Fort Stewart.
Be amazing.
Mickelson and DJ. I'm just losing run of myself now.
Yeah,
absolutely. I have one other bit that I was reading.
I have one other bit for you.
McIlroy.
Go on.
Speaking of him, he's been lamenting his pathetic putting and said he was too stubborn. Said, I've learned sometimes to not be too proud. I felt like I went long enough without asking for advice on putting when that was the thing letting me down. I really needed a second opinion. I was too stubborn. I wanted to figure it out on my own because I always feel if you do that, you take your own ownership of it and it's yours. Sometimes you need a second opinion. I got that in August and it really turned the season round for me. I've won a couple of things I hadn't won before. I won the Irish Open, which was a huge thing for me personally. That was nice to be able to knock that off and to win the FedEx Cup as well.
Wisdom comes slowly, but when it comes, it's still wisdom.
Yeah, yeah. This is the pattern of the Rory McIlroy career.
Yeah, I mean, well,
the world goes, you should do this.
He's and like, then a year later, it's almost as though he's revealing something. He's like, yeah, you know, I should have really done it. good. I have to say, I'm basking in the glow of this Irish Open news. So anything that gets Rory back to the summit of world golf is good news.
Yeah. Anything else?
Yes. Golf.com did a very scientific ranking of the best PGA seasons of all time. Have you seen this?
I did. I was about to click on it and I didn't. Okay, so now I'm intrigued. So I'm going to say the year Tiger won all the...
Yes. Tournaments. Okay. So that's hardly surprising. So 2000, when Tiger Woods had 9 wins, 3 majors. It's the modern standard for PGA Tour brilliance. He won the year's final 3 majors. The year 2000 is the benchmark. So number 2 is Byron Nelson in 1945 when he had 18 wins and 1 major. He won 18 times in 1 year. Okay. And in third place, it's a weird one. It's Bobby Jones in 1930. Now, he was a lifelong amateur. It's kind of that season is cemented in golf lore. 4 majors in the calendar year, the US Open, the British Open, the US and British amateurs. And both amateur events were match play. So it's hard to compare it against the professional era, but still, to win all 4 in the 1 year is incredible. And interesting, so then Ben Hogan makes an appearance then at 4 in 53 when he had 5 wins, including 3 majors. Now, this is really impressive, right? So the five wins he had came in six events. Three of them were majors. So the Masters, the US Open and British Open. And he had just returned from his fatal car accident, whatever it was, like within 2 years. He didn't play the PGA Championship because it was a 36-hole match play event, and so he opted to skip it. And so it leaves us with that kind of what ifs, you know, it's like he could have won all four. And then in fifth place is Tiger Woods again, 2006, when he had eight wins and two majors. Interestingly, Jack Nicklaus only makes an appearance in the list in eighth place in 1972, when he had seven wins, including the two majors. So Nicklaus's brilliance is more sustained over the course of a career rather than
Tiger had years where he just.
I mean, there's no doubt that this particular season is pretty impressive. Like, you know, he never mustered a top five all time season. In 72, he wins the Masters and US Open, each by three strokes, wire to wire. So that's pretty impressive. But he won five events that same year, finished second at three others. So that's the best year of Nicklaus's career.
Anything from the last 5 years? All right. I think that's it. I was watching a documentary on Sky the other night on the Big Three. I posted a clip actually on the Golf Weekly Twitter account of Gary Player. Player is just brilliant in
this. He is brilliant. And he could have won so many more majors if he'd been American.
But, well, and boy, did he mention that a few times.
Sure, I know. I mean, he's never tired of saying it. I also saw, was it you that posted the one about the mannequin?
Oh my God.
That was pretty cool.
It's the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
Like, there's a lot of these mannequin challenges, but.
The golf
Crikey.
One is, yeah.
But there must be 200 people involved in it.
Yeah. My first thought was like, oh my God, the level of organization to get all of these guys to do and all the camera setups and everything. It's an impressive.
I know some people from the European Tour listen in. Let us know who organized this.
That's
because
brilliant.
And it's something, not only has it gone viral, because all these things have gone viral, these mannequin challenges. Spain did a really good one after the football match against England the other night. But everything I've seen has said the European Tour one is by far.
It's
Harrington
phenomenal.
There dabbing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very, very good.
I don't know how you get that many people organised. All right, I think, is that it?
That's it.
All right, that is it for this week. We shall be back next week. Presumably, I think Joe is back. We'll be reflecting on the Dubai World Championship. Send us a tweet. Follow us on iTunes. And then just lands in your phone every day.
Automatically.
Every Thursday. It's
every
perfect.
Thursday, automatically.
All right, cheers, Fionn.
Cheers, Nathan. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here.